tonight, it will get up to about a 60% chance of showers and a low of 56. Memorial Day proper, mostly cloudy, 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms and a high of 75. So that would guarantee some humidity. And Monday night, mostly cloudy, 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms as well. Let's look at some temperatures around the state this hour. In Rochelle right now, it's sunny and 55. Chicago at O'Hare Airport, it's sunny and 54. In Macomb, 61 degrees. Decatur and Peoria are both sunny, 59 for Peoria, 56 for Decatur at this hour. In Mattoon right now, it's sunny and 59. And at Willard Airport in Champaign, it's 60 degrees. You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine on WILL.
Support for WILL comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the standard all-wheel drive Subaru Outback with an EPA highway rating of 29 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at their showroom on Route 45 in Savoy or at SubaruofChampaign.com.
You're listening to WILL AM 580. In this week's In My Backyard, Lisa Brault says that revitalization is underway in Urbana and that food is playing a driving role. Here's Lisa.
Downtown Urbana seems to be coalescing around food. Home to the newly expanded Common Ground Food Co-op for the past several years, and to Urbana's Market at the Square and the Urbana Sweet Corn Festival for well over three decades, food is a dominant presence in Urbana's downtown. And slowly, with the appearance of restaurants and bars with real staying power, word is out that the area's other downtown has got its own thing going on.
I think we're all very proud of the downtown Urbana's identity and how it relates to food. But I'm not sure if that alone has been a singular focus.
That's Brandon Boyes, redevelopment specialist for the city of Urbana. He and Tom Carino, the city's economic development manager, are enthusiastic about downtown Urbana's food-related successes like the co-op, the farmers market, and restaurants like Black Dog. While noting an uptick in the number of inquiries about opening local food businesses in Urbana's downtown, especially restaurants and kitchens for communal use. The lending climate has improved slowly in recent months, and the city has reworked its incentive programs to help local entrepreneurs of all kinds, but other obstacles remain. Tom elaborates.
A lot of our buildings in downtown are older building stock, and you have an even higher cost of startup when you have an older building and you're trying to retrofit it.
They're pretty excited, though, about a project in the works that will bring additional life to West Main Street in downtown Urbana later this summer.
And I kind of moved back here because I grew up here, and then I lived in Chicago for about 6 years, and I came back here. And that was one of my kind of end-all plans when I moved back, like eventually opening up a cafe here.
Josh Lucas is a coffee guy. He's originally from Homer, Illinois, and after spending 5 years plying the coffee trade in Chicago, he moved back to this area, itching to bring extra fancy caffeine to downtown Urbana. He looks the part, a 20-something with that many tattoos and a beard just screams professional coffee person, but he has chops and an affinity for engaging, chatty cafe culture. He describes the last cafe he worked at in Chicago.
Upset a lot of people that would come in to study because we would talk so loud and engage everybody pretty constantly. It was a fun, rowdy place to work. And I just like that interaction with people.
Josh will be sharing his space on Main Street with Pizza M, a pizzeria that's been working for years on a limited basis out of Mirabelle Bakery, also on Main. Matt Cho of Cake Design, the developer of the West Main project, is also planning a co-working space in the development and will be adding a couple other startup businesses to his roster. Also looking for space in downtown Urbana is this guy.
Originally, I was planning on moving down to Nashville, but I've always had this kind of inclination that I wanted to start a butcher shop because it focuses on all the things I really enjoy about cooking and none of the stuff that I really dislike.
Josh Boyd is a Danville native who's been serving up delightful specials with an emphasis on locally procured meats at Black Dog after a stint at Carmen's in Champaign and other restaurants in the United States. He was planning to move to Nashville to take a job there, but his love of charcuterie and huge support from his fans here convinced him to stay in this area and start his own business, The Butcher. Both Joshes have used crowdfunding, websites like Kickstarter and Indiegogo that offer customers and fans a chance to financially back a fledgling business, in addition to more traditional financing to get their enterprises off the ground. Josh Boyd, in particular, has a fondness for downtown Urbana, which he describes in his Indiegogo narrative as having, and I quote, a great art and cultural scene that is normally impossible to find in a smaller community. He's also a huge proponent of collaboration and cooperation between food businesses.
It should be a community. I understand that there's business and you have to be somewhat competitive, but at the same time, it's still a community. You still should get along. You should help each other out.
Will that spirit of collaboration and cooperation and innovation around food take hold, making CU a food destination in addition to a sports and cultural destination? Time will tell. For In My Backyard, this is Lisa Braltz.
And this is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. Illinois lawmakers remain at odds over how to handle the state's $100 billion in pension debt. But there's a chance that this spring, the General Assembly may finally do something about it. After years of no major action, there are not one but two packages designed to rein in Illinois' retirement costs that are currently under consideration. The House and the Senate have passed competing plans, and both of them seek to save Illinois money by cutting current and retired government workers' benefits. But as Amanda Vinicky reports, one important group of government workers are exempt in both deals: judges.
There's a lot of angst at the Capitol over what's happening with the state's pension systems. What lawmakers do about it will have ramifications for the Illinois budget, as well as for state employees' and teachers' pocketbooks, not to mention politicians' own political and financial futures. But it won't affect judges' wallets. Their retirement benefits would be left untouched. Republican Representative Dan Brady of Bloomington says that's not fair.
A teacher is just as important as a judge, and that should be across the board. I cannot believe that we aren't going to make some changes to over 2,039 judges across the state of Illinois, over 1,059 who are retirees, and not ask them to ante up anything?
That may well be what happens. But even if lawmakers finally come to an agreement and pass a pension overhaul, there's a chance that in a year or two, lawmakers could be sent back to square one. The state constitution guarantees public pension benefits shall not be impaired, so it's widely expected that any change to the pension plans will wind up in court.
Judges were excluded as a practical decision.
When presenting his pension package to the Illinois House, Speaker Mike Madigan indicated that's why his plan leaves judges' pensions untouched.
The absence of the judicial pension system in the bill will, let's say, relieve them of the burden of dealing with a conflict of interest.
The speaker sounds confident it'll work.
I think that there'll be at least four members of the Illinois Supreme Court that will approve the bill.
Remarks he quickly retreated from when pressed.
You've been in contact with them?
No, absolutely not. And I don't plan to. Be very clear about that. I've had no conversations with any member of the court concerning anything.
After all, it wouldn't be proper for a key lawmaker to try to exert influence over the judiciary. But critics argue Madigan already has. He's not only Speaker of the House, he's also head of the Democratic Party of Illinois. In 2010, the party was the top contributor in Supreme Court Chief Justice Thomas Kilbride's heated campaign to keep his seat. The Democratic Party gave Kilbride nearly $1.5 million.
Clearly, the Speaker would not be involved in such races unless he felt there were consequences from the court.
That's Jim Nolan, a former legislator and a retired University of Illinois political professor.
The court has been perceived throughout history as a political court. The judges are elected on partisan ballots.
It's a common perception, says Dennis Rendleman, but not one that's necessarily borne out by the evidence. Rendleman is a member of the Illinois Judicial Ethics Committee.
I don't think I'm totally naive about the politics of Illinois.
Supreme Court justices in Illinois only run for election once. After that, they stay on the bench unless voters take a once-in-a-decade chance to kick them off. Rendleman says that means judges don't carry the same sense of indebtedness to their donors as do legislators who are constantly running for re-election.
That's a whole different, I mean, it's not like the General Assembly where, you know, you can say that you owe me on this issue or you owe me on everything. I mean, that doesn't reach as far and have as lasting an impact.
And he says it's not as if there's any way to get around the deeper intrinsic conflict of interest issue that would arise if the judicial retirement system were to be included in a pension overhaul, that judges themselves receive state pensions.
There is a doctrine in judicial ethics called the rule of necessity.
The rule, Rendleman says, is invoked when there's no other court that could resolve the issue.
You can't take a question of the Illinois law and send it to Indiana to be resolved just because the Illinois justices may have an interest in that law.
It came into play during a case decided by the Illinois Supreme Court in 2004. In that case, Illinois judges were the plaintiffs, suing the state for trying to strip them of their automatic cost of living pay increases. Justices on the state Supreme Court ruled, well, in their own favor. They got to keep their pay hikes. They cited another clause in the state constitution, a clause that could be a factor if there were an attempt to reduce judicial pensions. The constitution specifically says a judge's compensation position cannot be diminished during his or her term. It's meant to keep the third branch of government independent so lawmakers can't punish judges for unpopular rulings. That's what Governor Pat Quinn seems to be alluding to when he justifies leaving judges out of what he has otherwise demanded be comprehensive pension reform.
There are some constitutional principles that are in the Illinois Constitution that make that more difficult. The judges have a little different status, and there's been a court case, a Supreme Court case, that's already addressed that matter.
Retirement benefits, after all, could be considered compensation. Bear in mind, there are far fewer judges in Illinois than there are, say, teachers. So Illinois will get far greater savings by cutting teachers' pensions than by cutting judges. Still, critics are quick to point out that Illinois judges are among the highest paid in the nation, and their pension benefits are particularly generous. The association representing Illinois' current and retired judges declined comment, but Judge Ed Petka was willing to offer his perspective. Petka was on the Will County Circuit Court for a few years before he got cancer and suffered heart problems, forcing him to step down. So now he's drawing a pension.
I haven't calculated to the penny, but I believe that it's somewhere around $190,000.
Petka doesn't apologize for it. He says he'd still love to be working as a judge. He didn't do anything nefarious to get his pension. It's the law. Even though he was only on the bench for a relatively short time, Illinois law lets judges combine their years of service with those spent in other government jobs. In Petka's case, he was a state legislator. He was in that job when Governor Rod Blagojevich and the General Assembly voted to, as he puts it, repeatedly raid the state's pension funds.
The numbers that were given were way off base. I said so at the time. And many of us who voted no on the rates turned out to be correct.
Illinois' pension funds are in trouble for a lot of reasons, but that's a big one. Petka's no longer in a position to decide what Illinois should do about the pension mess it's gotten itself into.
Thank God I no longer have to worry about those type of things. No matter what they do, it is going to be a very, very, very difficult sell.
Assell Senate President John Cullerton and House Speaker Mike Madigan, who, by the way, are both attorneys, are trying to make easier for the court to buy into by leaving judges out of it. But there's still one more legal argument to consider. Again, Judge Petka.
From my perspective, and very candidly, and I have not given this an enormous amount of thought, but I would think that having four out of the five pension systems of the state included and one being excluded may lead to a problem that has not been discussed that I'm aware of, and that's the equal protection of the laws.
In other words, all people similarly situated, whether they're a retired teacher, state worker, university employee, legislator, or if they're a retired judge, are to be treated the same way in the eyes of the law. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Burlingame Home Inspection and Performance. Burlingame performs property inspections along with energy audits and ratings for Energy Star, tax credits, and efficiency mortgages, all utilizing infrared technology. More information is at cusaveenergy.com or 217-649-1173.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 24th of May, 2013. 1626, on this day, Peter Minuit bought the island of Manhattan from the Lenape Indians. He did not give them trinkets and beads, as the legend goes. He paid them in useful things, cloth, kettles, axe heads, drilling, awls, worth about 60 silver Dutch guilders, which school children have been taught was worth about $24, but actually worked out to around $72, or the equivalent of about $1,000 today. Given the price of New York real estate nowadays, that represents about a 17% increase in value. In his History of New York City, George Lankovich maintains that Peter Minuit bought the island from the Canarsie Indians first, but they didn't live in Manhattan. They lived out on Long Island, and so he had to buy it over again from the Lenape. Today is the birthday of Bob Dylan, born Robert Zimmerman in Duluth, Minnesota, 1941, grew up in Hibbing nearby, just off Highway 61. Moved to Minneapolis, studied art at the University of Minnesota. He'd started out up in Hibbing with a rock and roll band, but he converted over to folk music and started playing gigs at a coffee house called the 10 O'Clock Scholar in Dinkytown near the university. He left Dinkytown for New York City, for Greenwich Village. By the mid-1960s, he'd gone back to rock and roll. Today, his lyrics, studied in many college poetry classes. Kevin Barents at Boston University has his students read Dylan's album John Wesley Harding. Christopher Ricks at Oxford puts Bob Dylan on a par with Milton, John Keats, and Alfred Lord Tennyson. Dylan wrote a volume of poetry and prose called Tarantula. It was published in 1971. And it's the birthday of Michael Chabon, born Washington, D.C. in 1963, grew up in the suburbs in Columbia, Maryland. And then after his parents divorced, lived with his dad in Pittsburgh, the setting of his first novel, The Mysteries of Pittsburgh. Came out in 1988.